Nachos Amigos, and welcome to Record Breakers, a music podcast where a group of friends gather together to share music with each other, an album at a time. It's like a little book club for music. Fun time had by all. I'm Petey Rave, and I can get thrashy with the best of them. Here with me is my team, my squad, my crew, my quorum. We've got David.
Cast in the name of God, ye not guilty.
Mm-hmm. We've got Matt.
This is a ball of wax. This is a whole nother ball of wax.
Mm-hmm. And we've got Brett.
I live every month like it's truck month. Mm-hmm.
I live every week like it's shark week. And we, of course, have a guest. It's that time of the cycle again. And I'm going to have David, who was the one that invited him, invited our guests. David, would you kindly introduce our guest?
Yeah, I guess, since it was my idea. Our guest on the Record Breakers podcast is a Tatsunoko aficionado. You can follow him on the Twitter Twitter at EngineVer. It's my friend Andy. Andy, thanks and welcome to Record Breakers.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Mm-hmm. We're here to talk about music, or mind our beeswax, as it were. We're here to talk about an album, and Andy, you have an album for us this week. What have you got for us?
This week we've got French-Canadian heavy metal band Voivod's debut album, War and Pain. This is in the genre of thrash metal, and it's also labeled as speed metal, yet to me it just kind of sounds, you know, kind of chunky and clunky and aggressive and brutal and all around kind of unique. This one was suggested to me as a YouTube video on the side. I forgot what else I was listening to, and that's typically how I get all of my metal suggestions, if not from randos on Twitter. So yeah, thought the album art was cool, and I jumped right into it.
Mm-hmm. That is a hell of an album art. That is of a time. That's an album art of a time and place right there. Let's talk about expectations. Let's go the other way around the circle. Brett, what were your expectations coming into this album?
I mean, for someone who has dabbled as I have in the metals a little bit, I haven't gone north of the border with much of my listening. I didn't recognize them by name. I may have heard some of the songs by this band on compilations in the past. I ran in circles with people that probably knew better than me, but that was all a long time ago. But I didn't know. I saw the album art. I saw what record label it was on, I made my quit. I saw the album art, and I was like, oh, I should look up back issues of heavy metal. Then I was like, yeah, I really had no idea what I was looking into. And yeah, there isn't really a whole lot of information out there that I could have run into about this band.
Yeah.
So,
Matt, what were your expectations coming into this album?
Not much. I had never heard of Voivod. The album title and the cover didn't leave me feeling optimistic for my personal typical musical tastes.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. I'm not sure what your typical musical tastes are, Matt.
I do. Either.
He listens to both type of music, country and Western.
And Western.
Hey, I mean, I've never met somebody who's defended both the Beach Boys and Dire Straits as much as you.
I don't remember defending the Beach Boys
as a concept.
Sure.
Who can play guitar and wear a good blazer?
Yes. All
right. And a cowboy hat.
I mean, you cowboy hats. The bolo tie is more important than the hat, because you can still not. Because when you're inside, you know, sometimes you gotta take the hat off. But that bolo tie, it's gleaming.
Oh. Bolo ties.
That piece of turquoise hitting the light just right, you know.
Yeah. Still don't have a bolo tie.
That's flexing on them. David, what were your expectations coming into this album?
Well, I guess I was probably the most familiar with Voivod of the podcast. I know that I've listened to a couple of their albums in the past. I believe Nothing Face, and having a minor familiarity with the album Phobos. I know that they are a contemporary of the era of 80s thrash, and even though they were north of the border, by all accounts, they fit right in at the time, while at the same time not being afraid to go in some different directions to make a more unique sound to themselves. And I always appreciate that whenever, especially in the metal genre, a band isn't afraid to kind of stretch and twist things. And I guess that's what I appreciated about Voivod. So I'm familiar with them than probably a few people, and I'll go with that.
Yeah,
your familiarity kind of stems to their later kind of less brutal albums, though, so I imagine that this one may have been a little surprising. Yeah. Considering that connotation.
Yeah, there's flashes of that on this, but yeah. This was definitely more of the time and of their contemporaries.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what to expect. I was expecting something wild and of a certain time and like maybe sound, but it's a sound that I'm not as familiar with musically. This album came out when I was about to turn one.
Okay.
This album came out right as I was being born, September 1984.
Yeah.
Like, I was ready to pop out.
Yeah, I was in my mama. I was about to be one year old. You know, a year before this, I was in my mom's belly, you know, so
I was in the womb, firmly. I was a corporeal form, but I was not a conscious being at the
my
time.
My mom probably would have been in the hospital.
Yeah. Would have
been like, yeah, it's about that time.
And Matt was simultaneously not born yet and already 12.
Yeah, he was already collecting a pension.
Yes, but
My parents had not yet met, but I was also 30.
Yes, exactly. That being said, let's get into what this album is musically. Andy, how would you describe this album musically? What would be like the themes I want you to bring up?
On a surface level, I would like to describe this album as, what if Motorhead actually played metal instead of just hard rock? Because there's a lot of elements to this album that make me think Motorhead. For instance, you know, Lemmy Kilmister always turned his bass all the way up. I think there's an anecdote from them recording one of their albums where his Marshall amp was smoking because he was pumping so much voltage and amperage into it. And kind of the same thing here with War and Pain. There's a lot of really heavy, you know, fast and, you know, kind of aggressive bass going on. The vocals are also really raspy. It kind of sounds like you're trying to whisper your best Arnold Schwarzenegger impression while also, you know, having your mic turned up and maxed out all the way.
I always just figured it was like a French-Canadian accent, more or less. That's what I always figured with Voivod.
True, but then the vocals are – he's singing in English, and they're just absolutely incomprehensible. You know, I had to look up the lyrics and actually just kind of go back and forth and be like, oh, there's some interesting concepts they're singing about, like – you know, like one of their songs on this Suck the Bone, you know, there's some weird stuff going on in there. Yeah. But also more like Motorhead, it's just chunky and fast. And if you notice on the album cover, there's also some Prussian. There's some Prussian kind of Nazi imagery going on. You know, Korgol, their mascot, their titular character, Korgol the Exterminator, has a kind of a Prussian pickle hole helmet going on. There's some spikes and a gas mask. And, you know, it's not as heavy as like the Iron Cross that, you know, Motorhead kind of deals with, but it's still kind of there.
Yeah.
But where Voivod kind of surpasses Motorhead is that instead of just their bass being turned up all the way, it seems like everything is turned up all the way. Like everything is peaked out on this album. Everything's turned up to 11, and it's more complex, thrashy, and speedy than a Motorhead. And really just compared to other thrash for the day, it feels like there's not a lot of structure going on with a lot of their songs. But there obviously is a structure. There's a chorus, there's a bridge, there's a breakdown. But it's not like, oh, okay, you know, 40% of the song is done. Let's introduce the breakdown for the next 20% of it and then wrap it back up. You know, there's a couple of songs where they have, you know, two breakdowns. A breakdown happens at the very end of the song. And
yeah.
It's heavily distorted. Like, I like my thrash, and the lack of structure makes it refreshing.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just, it's thrash, obviously, but it's also obviously Voivod. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah. I like the figuring out the lyrics the same way, the same way ghost shows trick you into something, saying there's a ghost talking. You just put the words on the screen over some random noise, and you can trick yourself into hearing anything. But yeah, let's talk about this album musically. Brett, how would you describe this album musically?
Well, it's another album from our fine friends at Metal Blade Records, a home of Gwar, King Diamond, and very early Goo Goo Dolls. They were once a different thing, but they had the same name, and every time I see the band,
they decided
line up
to
on
make
the,
money.
Yeah, and yeah,
there is no money in metal.
No,
my brother can attest to that.
Yeah. Especially when you stay really underground, like a Voivod or a, you know, maybe a Laz Rocket.
This album is absolutely rough around the edges. You know, of the time, like it, yeah, they that it doesn't quite sound like I can pick everything out in the recording that I would want to. I don't know if the original like masters of this album got burned up, but I heard that they were part of the big fire that ate through a bunch of people's stuff in 2008. But the Spotify mix, it definitely sounds like something that I would listen to from that time on cassette tape. It had a lot of that. That very, like, you lose a lot of the highs and the lows get kind of muddy, but like that's kind of what a lot of music I listened to of this time was like anyway. It's, I don't know how they recorded this. It does kind of have the "we are all in a room together" like kind of feel to it, like it's recorded like a punk rock album kind of sound, but I couldn't hear well enough to notice. But it's definitely, if you're coming in here to be able to hear every single pick or pluck or every single cymbal hit being able to come through, or the vocals sometimes, you're not going to get that. But like that, I mean, that's, you know, it's a debut album from some guys in Canada in 1984. Like, you don't come in expecting them to be, you know,
not spending, just Canada, Quebec.
Yeah. I mean, a different, when it comes to the stuff that I can speak to, probably the most, the like with the most background, is probably the guitar stuff, because there's definitely a lot of British influence on the guitar stuff. Like, it's a lot of borrowed tone, but it's like, so when it's late 70s early 80s heavy metal, like with guitars, there is a bag of tricks, and boy, that bag of tricks has a lot of tricks in it. Like, you know, you have your, you know, three-part guitar harmony that you solo boodle deedles. They don't do that here. It's all one guitar, so you don't deal with that. This is not quite dive bomb era guitar stuff. It's pretty straight up. The solos aren't exactly they're unlike later metal, where it's not as technically difficult to play or to follow. It's very listenable in the solos. It's kind of like when we listened to Megadeth, and I was like, okay, so you guys hear how one of these solos sounds like it could fit like up in a straight up rock song, but it's played fast. And then there's this where it looks like somebody who knows music wrote them, and you can tell the difference between Dave Mustaine and Marty Friedman just by how they write solos, because one of them knows how to get out of minor and minor pentatonic. This leans more on the old standards of heavy metal, which is just playing rock music fast and doing some cool things, which is fine. Like that is, there's a reason people do it. It's listenable. It's you can follow it a lot easier than you can when you get into more exotic, like, you know, structures to your solos and and stuff, but that's not a bad thing. It's just, it's not going to be gymnastics of a way that you're like, it takes a breath. You can follow it. They're not doing things that you won't hear. You'll be able to follow along, and they still rip the songs lean heavily on a groove. Like there's a lot of, you know, headbanging music is what it is. Like you're getting that palm muted stuff. When we get to the like tracks on the individual tracks, there are some borrowed tones from places that I wasn't expecting. One of them took me to the album Fly By Night, that I was not expecting that. There's also on the cassette release of this album, there was an extra track at the end after Nuclear War called Condemned to the Gallows, which was recorded for the Metal Massacre compilation from Metal Blade Records, which I've those existed in my in some circles that I was at. I remember that was where I heard a lot of Diamond Head, I think. But it's also that song. If you want to hear a palm mute song that has that's a headbanger with a wah solo and kind of sounds like Whiplash by Metallica, you know, that it's there you go. But yeah, they had a cassette only track, I was pretty impressed by that.
Yeah,
Condemned by the Gallows was reprinted on their newer CD, so it is more available than just, you know, YouTube and cassette. But yeah, it was. Did not come out on the record. You're absolutely correct.
It's like when Metallica's Kill 'Em All came out on record, you got Am I Evil and the Prince on there, but you didn't get that on the cassette tape. Because my grandpa's Ford Ranger was not playing me any Am I Evil. and I wish it would have.
Matt, how would you describe this album musically?
I might debate a little bit Brett's definition of listenable.
Are listenable. Okay, followable is probably something I should say.
Followable, okay. I don't see what's so bad about singing, all right? I don't know. It's metal is not my genre. I have yet to really find any metal that I can grab onto. But yeah, it's loud and it's wild. And if that's your thing, then boy, howdy, this album fits the bill. As soon as I started listening to the first track, I realized this is going to be one of those albums that I have to digest in multiple sessions. It took me 3 to get through it.
Oh,
that's a lot of sessions for this album. It's not exactly a rock opera.
No,
42 minutes.
Yeah. The singer sounds like he's kind of comically choking. Like if you were going to make a choking noise in a sitcom, this might be what it sounds like.
One-star reviews from all Quebecois listeners.
It is interesting though to hear these kinds of vocal stylings as early as 1984, which I don't know how common it was, but it's not the era I think of when I think about that kind of quasi growling.
We haven't done our education properly. We need to send you back into the even lower fi and even less skilled playing of the late 70s.
Let's just give him Ride the Lightning and press forward.
All right. So there's this song by The Who. It's called Boris the Spider.
David, how would you describe this album musically?
If you look at this particular time period of heavy metal, you'll definitely figure out where the influences come from with a lot of bands that came out from this time. It will either be Diamond Head and their palm muting staccato riffing, Iron Maiden being Iron Maiden, and Motorhead just being as loud as humanly possible. This album definitely leans more towards the Motorhead side of things, like Andy said. And again, they go a little bit further in all dimensions. Your mileage on that may vary. It is not as ultra technical as some of their American contemporaries, but that's not necessarily a bad thing, because what this album lacks in technicality, it has in daring. And you hear a little bit the early flashes of Voivod's willingness to experiment with playing with heavy metal. And you hear flashes of that in moments, very small moments on this album. It's the kind of thing you would expect from a band's debut album, to where they're playing and they're still trying to figure out who and what they are, but the flashes of what they become are there in this essentially 80s thrash metal album.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is wild and loud and fun. But yeah, they do. It's very much like the early days of thrash, the metal, the heaviness, the kind of the
metal
the
for speech. Metal's sake.
Eating. Yes.
Metal for metal's sake.
The metal for you know, the metalheads metal music. It I think it works, and it's structured in a fun way. It's definitely not for exactly everyone, but for a lot of people that kind of like get into like just want to like jump around and like headbang, this does have those elements at work, and it's like this fun speedy drums and the speedy guitar and it all works really well. But yeah, let's zero in on some of the tracks, because they're like we had mentioned before, there are some like moments here, some moments that one would call retroactively problematic. But yeah, but let's talk about some of the key tracks, because it's fun to kind of zero in on it. Andy, what would be some of the key tracks you would zero in on?
I'm going to preempt this discussion with saying I don't know a lot about music. I took 4 years of middle school band and 1 year of high school band before I
realized.
I played alto sax.
Alto sax. Nice.
Yes.
That is a correct answer.
I wanted to play trombone, because that's what Lanky Kong used in Donkey Kong 64. Yeah. But I ended up with saxophone. It made me a little sad, because that's what it's not Dixie Kong. It's the small girl Kong, which she plays. That made me a little disappointed. But then sax was easy, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but it won't, the saxophone doesn't work as well if you want to be Commander Riker and cosplay as him and with your pal dressed up as Joe Piscopo. But a saxophone is a much more you're in a room full of guitar players, and the saxophone is the guitar of horns.
Yeah. I'll keep my opinion about trombones players to myself.
Well, trombone players. Now, we're not talking about trombone players. I'm talking about the trombone.
They've kind of gone hand in hand for me.
I'm aware of some of that.
Yeah.
I say all that to say that I'll be using some terms that I'll most likely be using incorrectly that just sound right to me. So
I don't even use.
Go ahead.
I do that all the time.
Oh, okay. Good. I'm in good company.
We all do that all the time, yeah. Except for Matt.
So.
Keep my mouth shut and then talk about my total lack of knowledge about anything related to metal, yeah, other than Iron Butterfly.
Mm. I do want to say that the opening track, Voivod, really just sets the tone for this album, because you have like chains being drug and then someone breathing, and then this really weird, distorted kind of wah-wah guitar just coming out, and then a mighty crescendo to their singer Snake just shouting Voivod, and then just, you know, insanity erupts, and that's how you start a metal album right there, especially with like kind of the really dour and kind of depressing stuff that they talk about. You know, it's an album all about nuclear holocaust and killing people, so you know, it's a great setup. But I feel like probably the best track on the album is Warriors of Ice. You know, I always like songs that have layered openings, where one instrument starts and, you know, another one, and it just, and you know, over time you get the whole band start playing. But this one does that, and it focuses on rhythm. You get drums first, and then you get bass, and then everything else comes in. So that's just kind of like the opening to Voivod. I know, it's just a good layered opening. There's also a couple of tempo changes in this song, which is not something I typically expect for, you know, a debut album to a metal band. And coming back to why I was describing this album musically, you know, there's no real structure to how they, you know, set up and piece together their songs. There's actually two breakdowns in this song, which I thought was great. And also halfway through, if I'm hearing things correctly, there's just a new riff introduced halfway through the song, which was pretty great.
Yeah.
I don't want to say this song has movements, but the song just does kind of keep going on. It changes directions and introduces new melodies. And it has a dynamic. It does. Yeah. That's exactly what I was about to say. It's a very dynamic album. Mm-hmm. Another really good one is War and Pain. The intro kind of reminds me of Black Sabbath, which slowly turns into Metallica and then is just on and off. It just switches back to Voivod, which is good. It sounded like there was a whole ton of different styles kind of presented. There was some doom metal, there was a little bit of hair metal, and then just some classic thrash interspersed throughout. And the outro to that song actually mirrors the intro to song one on that side, which is I thought was pretty neat. And then finally, let's see, not to take up too much time, and there's a great drum solo on Live for Violence. I thought was really great. You know, rhythm solos are always my favorite parts anyway, and you know, bass being probably the more defining parts of my favorite bands. And that's why Black City is another really good one. There's just an aggressive cavalcade of bass on that song, and it just keeps up, just keeps running with it. And then Nuclear War, Away's drums, Away being the name of the nickname of the drummer. The second half, his drums on it are just absolutely killer. There's a lot of wah, a lot of guitar effects in that one. A real, you know, chugging, rowing melody in that song too. So I think those are really the standout ones for me. But the whole album, I kind of feel like is, you know, pretty solid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Away, the drummer is we were joking on our kind of pull back the curtain. We were joking on our own like internal chat about member timelines. You know, of course, like all brought on by Utter Iron Butterfly's epic Wikipedia. that we could be a member timelines. And Away is the only constant line. The drummer.
Oh yeah.
The only constant with the
That's
departures.
That's you, Petey. That's you.
Yes. I just wish I had the hand foot.
You're coordination. No Luke.
No, Luke.
You're not just going to show up in 1982.
Yes.
No, am I Luke?
No, because like we know you are credited with more than one name. Exactly. We would there have a link to your existence. Luke, yes. We still don't know.
Hashtag find Luke.
That's exactly. Right.
Hashtag bigger Luke.
Yes. Yeah, let's talk about key tracks. Brett, what would be some of the key tracks for you?
Oh, okay. There's plenty of tracks here to dig into, but I'll stick to the things that caught my eye in my listens. Iron Gang was where I was, okay, there's Motorhead influence or influence evolution of the same variety. War and Pain, when it opened up, I immediately switched over and clicked on the Spotify link to Seasons in the Abyss to listen to the opening of that, and I could see some of the thrashness of it, you know, the slow plotting opening, and then but the thing I did not expect on this album was how much Judas Priest guitar like sound I was going to get, because there's something very specific about Judas Priest guitar tone. They use a chorus pedal on it, so it has that weird you got another thing coming like that chorus on a overdriven guitar playing a jangly chord. When they do it in staccato with the cymbal, like the every downstroke is on like a caught cymbal being hit, that's one of the bag of tricks. Another, you get more of in Black City, you get a little bit more of that Screaming for Vengeance tone. with just one guitar, mind you. Like, this doesn't go crazy. It's not like a Mega Man level where you're going to get like three different melodies going on at the same time that go in together. But that's fine because these guys are Canadian. So they've listened to some Rush. And on Black City, they decide, not since Bitor and the Snow Dog have I heard what sounds like drums hooked up through a wah pedal, then do it to a stereo effect. But modulation of drums to where it becomes directional and then it sounds like a wah pedal is something that I have to applaud. I've always been confused how that happened. And I wondered how Neil did it on the recording in Fly By Night. Like, is somebody working a pedal while they're also working a pedal? like a wah pedal out of drum kit.
Surely that's after the fact.
I'm sure it is, but could you? Nope. But I didn't. But this is
Neil Peart could do it. He could do it.
There's also a vocalist in this band. He's not doing anything during the solo. Like, my opinion on that.
Sitting there looking pretty.
That's right. He could work the wah on the drums, the drum wah. But no, like, that was the sprung of the album for me. Like, I whenever I hear drums that have an effect that's not just like the delay, or like it's not just obvious digital drums, or it's not like some guy clicking his mouse to make the drum sound. Like, when it's somebody doing something really neat, like that you don't hear a lot of, like, just it's an effect that has gone into like the unpopular things to do with a drum set. And like, I'm glad that I heard this. And also, it does not hurt that all of these things that I heard were in that extremely low quality of like, you know, it's like we were pulling out a like Milo Goes to College, or like any of the Minor Threat that it's that quality. It's not quite terrible. I can't hear what Danzig's mumbling, but it's getting there.
Yeah.
So like, add all of these, like, you know, obviously like the tone, I'm sure at live when they played this music live, the tone was probably way different in than what it sounded like in the studio, because everybody was Gibson and Marshall or your wanker up until they were pointy guitars. And this was definitely like that transitional period where people could afford a stomp box that was like that big and cost $300 in the 80s and could make you have a chorus. But like, hearing the drums have an effect, like hearing the, because it sounds like it was recorded in somebody's mom's basement. I know it wasn't. That's but like, there is something to that where when somebody brings out like a digital toy or like an effect,
Slagle's basement, everybody,
I'm like, yeah, I'm just like, you know, the tip of the hat. You could have not done that. There's a lot of things in this album that they could have just, you know, they could have toned it down. They could have done another take. but they didn't. They left it rough and raw.
Yes. Matt, what would be some of the key tracks for you?
Warrior's Vice. The bass just right at the opening. I knew it was a bass because that's the frequency range a bass usually occupies. other than that, it was so distorted. I would not have otherwise known. And this song was the first one that I really started to think, is this singing self-parody? But I think it was too early to like wrap back around to self-parody. But it was, I don't know. It sounds like the singer's making a goofy face, and I'm not knowledgeable enough
they probably were
purposefully.
This was a few good years before metal was willing to parody itself.
Spinal Tap came out in 1984, but they weren't making the jokes that you would make if you were to make it about 1984 metal.
To answer your question, Snake is making a wait, no, I don't know if he's showing up. Snake's making a pretty nasty face, so yeah.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Yeah, no, that... yeah, that seems about right. That tracks.
He was making a goofy face, but he thought it was cool.
Hey, we're and fans of goofy faces around here.
That was my real question.
Wasn't a goofy face. Definitely making a goofy face. It's a metal was it face.
Purposefully goofy.
Wait. Oh, there's an earnestness without about question. This album that is wait, like the you got to believe that they were giving it their all.
Oh yeah,
this was they the serious that. Most serious album ever recorded.
Yeah, metal face. Doom is here. I'm pretty sure he wasn't around back then. Doom.
Yeah. And Blower, I
barely know her.
Yeah.
Hi-o.
I definitely had to look up the lyrics to this song to figure out what exactly they were talking about.
How would you do that?
Yeah, I just have a note. There's no context for it, but like, I just keep a little notepad file open, and I'll just like, oh, this song's interesting. Look it up, and then write some comments. And I just have this line that, what the fuck? And I really have no context for that.
I don't think you need the context.
It's okay. It's okay.
Yeah. And I think it was the chorus because it's the singing on the chorus is just really something special. And again, going back to that whole, is it self-parody or is it earnest? This album really is riding that line for me.
Yes. Poe's Law. Really.
Around this time, it still would have been earnest. Around this time. Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind this of what I this figured. Is what
they were parodying, this yeah. earnestness. Yeah. David, what would be some of the key tracks for you?
On Iron Gang, the guitar solo on this song, it was short, but it really stuck out to me. This was my sproing. I wrote in my notes that if Kirk Hammett still cared, this is what he would sound like. It's fast, it's well done, but it still has a little touch of Hendrix flavor to it, where it's just a little bit of color. And kind of extra dimension to having a little bit of wah and not just kind of laying on your wah and falling asleep. Also, Black City. I think this was the song where I first heard it, and it was where I first started hearing flashes of what Voivod would eventually become. Most of this album is pretty good quality 80s thrash metal, but you hear flashes of what Voivod would eventually be turned into, and I think you really hear it on Black City, where they seem to have a few more riffs in their chamber, and they weren't afraid to use them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, like it's been said, Voivod, the track, does set a nice pace. It is their Bad Company. If it had only named the album Voivod, we would have had the nice, you know, the perfect trifecta right there. And then it was hard for me to, even when listening to the album, to like zero in on particular songs, because there was a lot of memorable moments, but like remembering like which particular song kind of like it just kind of like went into a groove, but like Suck Your Bone definitely was memorable, partially because of the lyrical content.
Lick My Love Pump levels yes. of
again yes. folks, this was before it became a parody.
Yes. And it is fantastically weird to go back and kind of experience these freaking French Canadian weirdos and their very earnest thrash metal.
We're not talking about International Wrestling Cartel again, Petey.
No.
I mean, how old do you think these guys wrestling. Were? Like, some of this could be like, oh, they might have been teenagers. Like, yeah. I'm glad the stuff I made didn't make it through MySpace.
Exactly.
But
yeah.
Deej and I can attest to with our experience with interspecies wrestling. Quebec is weird.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
Interspecies yeah, wrestling?
We're just going to say Quebec is weird.
Okay.
Canada is Canada, but uh-huh. Quebec is weird.
I mean, they have Yuppie, like everybody's favorite mascot.
Yes.
Yes.
How does Yuppie compare against Gritty?
No, Yuppie and Gritty are like they're cousins. Yuppie was the
cousins, identical cousins.
Yeah, like Yuppie was. They tried to move him to DC when the Expos moved away, and like I don't think anybody in DC was gonna want to have anything to do with Yuppie. But if you like go to a like if you hear like radio and they're like, but the kids come down and like it's like the local like mascot to attract kids to your fair, and Yuppie will be here. But yeah, like
and the San Diego Chicken.
Okay.
Yeah, the San Diego Chicken and Yuppie are along the same lines. Yeah.
Just you know. Go back.
Yes.
Yeah, go back.
There's weird things. Yeah.
Yes.
Go back is weird.
But yeah, let's bring it back around the horn, talk about some conclusions. Brett, what would be your conclusion on this album as a whole?
I mean, this was an album that wasn't difficult for me to hear. It wasn't difficult for me to listen to. It scratched a certain kind of itch that... like I remember driving around listening to, you know, Metallica's Kill 'Em All, Judas Priest Screaming for Vengeance, and Earth AD on cassette tape. It was shitty quality. I couldn't understand anything that was going on. I couldn't hear any of the tone. And I still dug it. That was probably the way that I listened to all of those albums the most in my life. So that didn't really stop me. There's nothing, no one thing on here that like blew my mind. But they did everything. If you were a contemporary and could only look at what was around at the time that this came out, they did a pretty good job of putting one of these together and doing it in a way that is, you know, discernible from one track to another, which is a problem that a lot of things have. I listen to so much punk rock that I can't tell you the names of those songs because there are 35 of them and they all sound the same because there are limitations to 1984 heavy metal songs as well. Like we had not blazed all of the trails yet to figure out that there is more to this. If you go into the world, steal from other genres and heavy metal it. So I don't want to judge it with that, but like, this is fun. Like I am also the kind of guy that keeps I enjoy the tone of the 80s more than the average person. Even yeah, I like the things that they were doing, even if it was like, oh, they're doing that thing. Like, yeah. I enjoy that thing.
Yeah. Matt, what would be your conclusion on this album as a whole?
I kind of figured going in that I wouldn't enjoy the album. I did my best to give it a fair shake, but it kind of went about as expected, which I do get disappointed when I don't enjoy an album because I am always looking to discover new music and, you know, enjoy genres. And I always hope that maybe this album will be the one that will, you know, be my first step into this other direction that I can really start to explore and enjoy on its own terms. This wasn't it for me.
Mm-hmm. David, what would be your conclusion on this album as a whole?
I would say that this is an above average but not elite 80s thrash album. It's a Matthew Stafford thrash album, above average but not elite. I feel like they were not afraid to show their love for Motorhead, and I respect the hell out of that. Also, I think that the guitars were really well done. You could see a very creative, very talented guitarist on this album, and that's always good in metal when you have a guitarist that's really not afraid to test himself and stretch his limits in metal. The sound is big and raw and ugly, and I kind of love it for that. I love that it sounded like it was recorded in a room while also not sounding like Saint Anger. I really enjoyed spending time with this album because younger me absolutely would have loved this. Maybe I might ruffle some feathers here and say
I enjoyed this more than Kill 'Em All, but probably not as much as Killing Is My Business and Business Is Good. That's pretty much what I would say. Above average, but not elite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I argue with your definition of elite. But
for quarterbacks or metal albums?
I think Kill 'Em All is a perfect Diamond Head album.
Yes. Yes.
That I will agree with you on.
Yeah. I think this is I like the analogy that David put on there, the above average, not elite, you know, good, not great. But and that's okay. It's fun. Especially because we're talking about a debut album from a group that you can say, like, okay, there's going to be more bunch of 20-year-old dudes still trying to get off the schneid musically and trying to find a sound and you're kind of like doing that thrash thing, and I think they do it well, and you can kind of like, if you're into the dirty messiness of it all, there's definitely a lot to enjoy. Like I that's what I enjoyed about it. It's just a good, dirty, messy metal album that just like is fun and annoying and like in all the best ways. It's like it just kind of like it. This is like, I can chill to kind of this kind of music. I could chill and hang out and study.
Thrash to chill to.
Yes, exactly. Just another form of hi-fi beats. To chill and study too, like
okay. Now I do disagree with your definition of hi-fi.
Yeah,
I did say
mostly loud.
I did say lo-fi.
Yeah, it is. Okay. No, I'm just kidding. It is. Is it just a different lo-fi beat? It is. I think actually more accurate a definition of lo-fi than lo-fi hip-hop. But yeah, it's fun, and like it's just like you this is fun music to like headbang and like party to and mosh to and like thrash around with. So like can't hate on that. Well you can, but a lot of people won't. we've learned that. But yeah, last but not least, Andy, what will be your conclusion on this album as a whole?
Voivod continues kind of the tradition for me for foreign bands from countries you don't necessarily attribute thrash metal with. Like, you know, everyone expects thrash metal with America and some places in Britain. But, you know, like Artillery, you don't really, well, maybe you do, but like they're from Denmark. And Artillery equally doesn't follow really much of a structure to their music. You know, Voivod kind of does the same way. They introduce and bring to the table their intricacies being from where they are, which I think is good. And although the somewhat repetitive tonally for the album, because it's that heft and that, you know, chunky grunge throughout, it's a tone that's brutal. You know, it's amp smoking, and it serves as a bludgeoning debut album for a band that continues onward to become something more progressive and conceptual without leaving behind their underground, you know, sounding roots. Like when you get to their fourth album, Dimension Hatros, you know, you get their core goal, The Exterminator, just happens to jump dimensions. And it's a concept album about, you know, oppressive governments and a whole bunch of stuff.
This is more my stuff.
Everything. Yeah. That's Dimension Hatros. Stuff. That's a good one. But at the end of the day, it's just a bludgeoning thrash metal about a Viking mercenary, warlord, scientist, revolutionary living in a post-nuclear apocalypse. And that's just really neat.
Yes.
You know, it has a sound that matches that, you know, narrative kind of style.
Yeah.
And I'm all for it.
Yeah. I'm all for a little bit of like ridiculousness, hardcore ridiculous messiness.
I love high concept metal. I love it.
You don't say. let's get, all right, those are our thoughts. Let's get down to the main event. Let's get to the main event of the evening, the moment we've all been waiting for. our haiku reviews, let's get down to the nitty gritty. Haikumero numero uno. Brett, what would be your haiku?
Some guys from up north doing their own metal thing. Simple, effective.
Mm-hmm. Matt, what is your haiku?
Voivod war and pain. Identified more with pain. Likely won't return.
David, what is your haiku?
An 80s thrash album. Metal down to the marrow. 40-minute ride.
Mm-hmm. My haiku. We're thrashing around with really fun, messy noise. Of its time, but cool. And last but not least, Andy, what is your haiku?
Voivod, oh Voivod. Blades, blood, nukes, bass, smoking amps. Motorhead be damned.
Yes. Nice.
All right.
And that...
I love Motorhead, though. Motorhead's great.
Yeah.
Motorhead's fun. Yeah, those are our thoughts on Voivod's War and Pain. You can, of course, find it on our Spotify playlist. Play Record Breakers, the home game. Do your due diligence and your due diligence. You can find the link to our Spotify playlist on the show notes, either on the website or where, depending on the on your podcast catcher of choice, they might pull in the full notes with the formatting and whatnot. On that Spotify playlist, well, actually, no, it won't be because it's not on Spotify. The next week's record won't be, and this is going to be interesting. You're all going to have to do some more diligent homework if you're going to follow along. But this is going to be a fun record for us to talk about. I'm not sure because it's going to be a weird experiment. So recently I follow the Barracks on YouTube because, you know, every once in a while I just want to watch a skate video. And they had a video by a video showcasing the psychedelic skateboarder known as Richie Jackson. And it had a song on it that was like interesting and kind of cool. And I had to Shazam it because it didn't have credits
Shazam.
On it. And I found that it was a band called Orange Wedge. And there was zero information on the internet about this band. Like, well, not zero, but like very little. They had released like maybe, I think, the two records in like the 70s or whatever, or actually the 80s. I gotta look that up again. But it is a wild band, but they actually existed back in the day, and we're gonna talk about Orange Wedge. Figure out who they are, and we're going to talk about the album No One Left But Me. I acquired the album through some means. It's out there on the internet. You can download it. Somebody has it up. So follow along with us, but that'll be a fun next discussion for next week. But yeah, before we go into where you can find the rest of us, Andy, where can people find you? What do you got going on in the internet?
Well, I'm always on Twitter at EngineVeer, of course. Completely unrelated to any of the content on this podcast, except for David's background. I also run a website, thebigoarchive.com, which is a 20th anniversary website focusing on my very favorite thing, the Big O. That's just really the only other thing I've done besides shitpost all day on Twitter.
Yes. yeah.
There's always that.
Yeah, you can find him on EngineVeer, as you can see up there. And you can find the rest of us all over the internet. David is at Call Me DJM. Matt is at Emeritic W. Brett is at HibbityBirdBird, HibbityBirdBird. I'm at PD Rave. The show's at 4 Record Breakers. That's the number 4 Record Breakers. RecordBreakersPodcast.com, RecordBreakersPodcast.gmail.com, Rebelly.net for this and other shows, Rebelly TV on YouTube and on Twitch. You can find us everywhere you find podcasts: Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, all over the place.
Mixer?
How about no. They died a long time ago. They died months ago, as far as the release. as far as this release is concerned. Yeah. Subscribe, like, share, do all the things, hit the bell, slap the walrus, spank the monkey.
Trounce the
more metal.
Do all the things. Until next time, hasta los huevos.
Toodaloo.
Hashtag find Luke.
Rebelli Podcast, baby.
Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.